Hey friends, welcome to the Great Things Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Herring. Let's be honest, things aren't going too great in the world right now. I think we can all agree on that. But I've got some good news. This space is created for you to join in on conversations of how sometimes the hardest, lowest moments of our lives can produce the greatest joys. So come on in and jump on this virtual couch with me as we talk about some good news and great things. Welcome back to Great Things. Today I have Tish Oxenrider on the show. She's a writer based in the Austin, Texas area, but has traveled with her family all over the world. I wanted to have her on because she recently released a book called Bitter and Sweet, A Journey into Easter. So with Easter quickly approaching, I thought this conversation would be helpful for anyone who wants to have a deeper encounter with Jesus as we prepare our hearts to celebrate his death and resurrection. So let's jump right into it. Tish, it's so great to have you on the Great Things Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Well, we haven't met in person yet, but maybe someday. We're practically neighbors because I'm in Dallas and you're near Austin, right?
Yeah, just 30 minutes north of Austin, right?
So you've been there for a long time?
I was born and raised in Austin. Okay. And then we traveled a lot. We lived overseas. We lived in Oregon. And we've been back here for, 5 years now. So I guess that's a long time in today's world. But yeah.
Your family is from that area, though, too?
Yes, extended family. Yep, most of mine.
Yeah, what has that been like for you and your family to be from that area pre-everyone moving to Austin?
I know. It's not remotely the same city that I grew up in at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. So for anyone who may not know, who is Tish Oxenrider?
I am primarily a wife and mom to 3 kids. I've got slightly older now. My youngest is 11. My oldest is 17. And I am also a writer, a podcaster, a trip leader or a travel guide. And I am also an English teacher. I teach English to high schoolers a couple days a week here in town. So I wear a lot of hats, but I don't wear them at the same time.
That's really cool. I didn't know the English teacher part. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think there's something really important about foundation and how each of us got started in our faith journeys, because it's so unique for each of us. So a question that I ask every guest on this show is, when and how did you first meet Jesus?
I grew up in a Christian home, so we went to church just about every Sunday, and it was just a normal part of life, but I didn't connect the dots on it being not only a choice that I could make for myself, but something that was actually applicable to my own life and not just, you know, a thing that was true about us as a family until I was about 13, 14. It was the summer before my freshman year at summer camp, which is kind of a classic story, coming of age story for a lot of us. But at summer camp for my church is when, for whatever reason, it just finally clicked that the whole story that I grew up hearing about Jesus was actually a reality for my own here and now present life. I think up till then, I had understood the basic tenets, but it was always something that had happened way back then. And I didn't really see how it applied to my high school teenage life. So something about that summer clicked. I don't know if it was like something was just explained in the right way, or, you know, my own heart was perhaps bent in the right direction per the Spirit's leading, but it was around then. But that is not to say suddenly I had this epiphany and understood it all, because right. The older I get, the more I realize how little I know. So I look back on that time just as like the very start of my journey with Christ and making it more about my life and not just a thing to learn about.
Yeah. As someone who used to work for a summer camp ministry, I'm always encouraged to hear when people like you got saved at camp, because it just shows how important those trips are and that they actually have eternal value, not just a fun week to get away. Mm-hmm. You've been walking with Jesus ever since then, and that really gets me fired up.
Yeah, me too. And me too, as a parent now of teens who invest money in those activities that feel sometimes like, is this worth it? But, you know, I have to remember my own story and how formative those events were in my life. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm excited to talk with you today because you just released a new devotional called Bitter and Sweet, A Journey into Easter. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about the book and why you wrote it.
I wrote it as a compendium to the book I had written before called A Shadow and Light, A Journey into Advent. So this is a book that I had written, honestly, for my own family. I had already written several books, and I wasn't really thinking about, you know, being someone who wrote a devotional for others. But when Advent was, I don't remember, maybe 5 years ago when my kids were at that age, I was looking for an Advent book that we could use as a family that was open and go and theologically rich, but not so intense or a huge commitment that I felt behind.
Yeah.
I also didn't want something that just skimmed the surface or that involved craft sticks or cotton balls. That just wasn't my style. So yeah. I ended up writing this devotional for my own family. Others seemed to appreciate what I had done. And long story short, I ended up publishing it. Well, then people started asking when I was going to write a book about Lent. And at first my thought was, I'm not, that's not a thing I was planning to write on, but I ended up praying about it, asking God, talking to wise people in my life. And, there was a consensus that this was a need for those of us who participate in the liturgical calendar in Lent, but needed something that was accessible, ecumenical, didn't feel overwhelming, open and go, was never made you feel behind. And yet really helped you park and really think about what Lent is for and why we, you know, recognize this really old tradition. And so that's how Bitter and Sweet came to be.
Well, it is a beautiful book. I've been going through it and really have learned a lot, and I'm enjoying it. But for anyone who may not be familiar with Lent, could you give us a little bit of background and history on it?
Yeah. So Lent is actually very, very old. We have record of Lent being celebrated by the early Christians, something around as early as 150 AD. So we're talking really old. If you think about it, even older than the canon of the Bible, which was several hundred years later. So it's something that Christians have recognized almost since the beginning, we think, which makes sense if you think about it, because when the church was started by Christ in a Jewish tradition, they were well-versed in things like feasting and fasting and having all these rituals and communal ways of participating in the life of a collective people, like, you know, the church. It would make sense that this would be a natural next step in a way. Lent is part of what's considered the liturgical calendar, which is simply the year-round way the church marks time. Mm-hmm. It's the simplest way to put it. So this church calendar begins at Advent. The first Sunday of Advent is considered the new year. And so those many of us know are the four Sundays leading up to Christmas. Christmastide is then the 12 days leading to Epiphany, which is the day we recognize the wise men visiting Jesus. And then depending on which tradition you're from, we have a few weeks of ordinary time, which is focused on just simply growth. Ordinary comes from not so much like typical or everyday, like what we think of it as, but numbered, like just numbered weeks, ordinal. So we have a few weeks of those. And then we have a day called Ash Wednesday, and that's what begins Lent. And Lent is the weeks, the 46 days leading us to Easter. So basically, if you think of Lent with two bookends, the first one is Ash Wednesday. The last one is Holy Saturday, because then the following Sunday is Easter Sunday, which is then 50 days. And then we, you know, go on with the liturgical calendar. But it's helpful to think of holidays or seasons like Advent and Lent as seasons of fasting or preparation to coincide with or follow up seasons of Christmastide and Eastertide as seasons of feasting. We never see in the calendar fasting without feasting, and that's because we don't fast for its own sake. We're not a people who just fast for the heck of it or to prove our worth or any form of that. It is a form of preparation for the feast. And it's also just kind of cool that even though Lent is long, Easter is longer. And so it is a fast, but it's to prepare for a really great feast.
So in the beginning of the book, you mentioned that it's an antiquated tradition, but our modern culture needs it now more than ever. Why do you think that that's true?
It's easy for us in our Western modern world to kind of separate our physicality from our faith. I think sometimes we forget that we are embodied people, which sounds silly because, you know, we all know we have bodies. We all know we live in a broken world. We just sometimes forget to connect the dots between our here and now ordinary lives that we live in bodies with our faith. I think sometimes, especially because now things are relatively easy for us compared to all of human history when it comes to how we get our food, how we journey, you know, travel, how we find what we need for our families, how we raise kids. It really, you know, we have conveniences all day long that we kind of forget our conveniences are, and, you know, in the big scheme of things. And so something like Lent forces us or just asks us, invites us to slow down and recognize our finite bodies, our temporal bodies, our broken bodies, and how we live in a broken world. And even though we think of our faith often, it sometimes just stays in our heads. And something like a fast and then the other two pillars of giving and prayer, a lot of times they can stay in our heads too, but really it's an invitation to take on embodied forms. And that's, I think, a beauty of fasting. Because it reminds us that this is not all there is. This finite physical world we live in is just a blink of an eye in light of really the reality of where our true citizenship is.
You may be wondering, where did the name Great Things come from? Well, Psalm 126:3 says the Lord has done great things for us and we are filled with joy. That truth has been so evident in my own life, and I want to help others discover the great things that He can do in their lives through the gospel and living a life of surrender to Him. My hope is to leave you better than you came and to encourage you to fully embrace the joy that comes from walking with Jesus. Yeah, so let's talk about Lent's trifecta, the three traditional pillars.
Yeah. Okay. Well, most of us think of Lent with fasting. You know, we reckon, even if we didn't grow up with Lent, we at least connect the dots with something like giving up something for Lent. That's kind of the catchphrase, right? And usually it's something like sugar or caffeine or chocolate or dessert or some form of that, right? Yeah. And that's not a bad thing at all. You know, fasting is commonly associated with food of some sort, and that's great. But yes, fasting is simply a practice that has been around since, you know, the Old Testament as a form of making room to hear from God in a unique way. So that is the point of fasting. Fasting isn't like an intense, you know, checklist or workout to, it is a workout, a spiritual workout, but it's not a way, it's not like a competition to prove to God that we are, you know, good Christians or that we've earned our Easter, anything like that. We fast by way of letting go of something to make room for something else. And so sometimes that looks like fasting from, you know, like a particular food, or, you know, perhaps we can get more creative in our modern world, fasting from a streaming service or an app or social media or some just convenience in life that's not a necessity. But we do that in order to make room for something else. And that's when we consider these other two pillars that make up the trifecta, prayer and giving. So these are three combined. These are three things that allow us to hear from God in a unique way that perhaps we wouldn't otherwise, were we not actively participating in Lent. And so just to give people a more concrete example, if you take fasting from a form of food, like, you know, sugar, let's just say, when you fast from sugar, what you're doing is whenever you have those cravings or whenever you have that maybe just habit of something like dessert or a sweet treat, you're asking yourself to be more active in your daily life by saying no to something temporary, something even more or less good. It's not a bad thing in itself. But when we do that, we're not just saying no and then neglecting ourselves. We're taking on something else. And so that might look like we use that time to remember to pray, like whenever we have that hankering or the cravings, or perhaps to give, you know, like we are maybe putting the money we would put towards dessert and channeling that to something else, like a ministry that participates in food insecurity or some other form of that. It can also look, honestly, the giving kind of practical and here and now in your own family life. So a few years ago, when I fasted from sugar, that is also when I started our backyard garden. And so that was a cool thing to make really visceral Lent, especially because it's, you know, late winter to early spring. It's a great time to garden and you see literal new growth and new life. And you're growing things that are good for you, you know, that God gave us to enjoy and feast on. And so there's a lot of really cool, tangible ways that we can lean into this trifecta to make Lent more of a true invitation to participate than a checklist.
That's really cool. Is that something that your family looks forward to every year? Do you guys all fast the same thing, or do some fast and some not?
Yes and no. It depends on the year. My kids are old enough now to where it's not really a thing we force them to do because they can make their own decisions. And plus, we both find that, my husband and I find that to be an important part component of Lent because we want to make sure our kids understand that this is not a rules-based thing, or that this is a way of earning God's favor. And so we invite them to participate in Lent as an ancient tradition, as something that we choose to do. But we mostly do it now by way of modeling. So we will talk about our own fast, what we're learning, what we're hearing from God, how we're messing up on it, because I think it's important for kids to see the reality of that. But there have been years in the past when we have chosen to do it together as a group, but in kind of just a, I don't want to say a simpler way, but in a more life-giving way.
Yeah.
So, you know, with little kids, it's helpful to remember that this is about hearing from God and not about how good you can be. So if we were going to do something like no dessert, naturally, I mean, unless the kid decides to make it on their own, they're not going to get dessert if mom's not going to make it. So in some ways it is a family participation, but we do it in a really gentle way where we talk about it a lot and not necessarily just perform the duty and then move on, you know?
Yeah, that's so important and great that you're modeling it in that way. Mm-hmm. So we see that Lent is often observed by the Catholic Church and more liturgical mm-hmm. denominations. Do you think that the Lenten season should be celebrated by all believers of Christ?
Well, it definitely should, because it is for all believers of Christ. You know, this is, like I said earlier, a very old tradition. So it's from the very early stages of the church. But, you know, those of us who are more liturgical, I think just have it naturally in our rhythms anyway. When we go to church on Sundays, we hear about it, we participate in it more, but it is not an exclusive thing. It's not like this is for certain types of Christians and not other types of Christians. That's not a thing really. Yeah. Right. We just might be more well-versed in a certain tradition, but it has nothing to do with, you know, who's allowed to partake in it. It really is an invitation. The whole liturgical calendar is an invitation. It's going to happen whether or not you participate in it. It's something the church recognizes anyway. And so if you want to participate in the global church and honestly, the ancient church, it's just a cool way to kind of dip your toes into it, especially if you're not familiar with it. I didn't grow up liturgical. So, you know, that's the way I kind of entered into the whole thing was by way of Advent anyway, because I wanted to have a more meaningful, quote, countdown to Christmas for my kids.
Yeah.
And that's how I eased into it. So anyone who isn't used to it, I think it's perfectly okay to understand, like just to go into the Lenten experience as a newbie and just learn about it. Maybe do one thing, you know, maybe you're just learning about a simple fast, or maybe you're adding more prayer, and just as you go and learn more and more about the history and the different ways we can practice it. Just be prepared to hear from God in a new way and perhaps add more in future years. Because it really is, it's more about that participating in the life of the church than it is about, you know, any sort of checklist.
And how long did you say that it's been that you've been following the liturgical calendar?
Honestly, about 12 years now. Since my kids were little, because I wanted like more scaffolding, you know, in our family's rhythms. So yeah, I had heard of the words like Advent and Lent growing up, but it wasn't anything. I wasn't even anti those things. I just didn't know anything about them.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of the same for me. Growing up in a less liturgical denomination, you don't hear about it as much, but I have been hearing about Lent and Advent more and more each year, which has been really cool. So how would you say that the liturgical practices have added value to your life?
There's been, countless ways, but I would say the few that come to mind, I love history. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, it's just been a really cool way to recognize my small part in the global church, both here and now and in the past and in the future in a way. And so for me, it's just enriched my relationship with God by reminding me that I'm not alone, mm-hmm. that when I participate in something like Lent, I'm participating in something that many, many people, brothers and sisters, have gone before me and done as well. I also love the cyclical nature of the liturgical calendar, that it comes around again and again, and it reminds us of the rhythms God has given us. Because here's the thing, we already have a liturgy. We all participate in some form of that. You know, we're pretty familiar with like Christmas and Easter. That's part of the church calendar. But we also have our own, cultural liturgies. We have 4th of July. We have Super Bowl Sunday. Those are all forms of liturgies. But then we even have our own familial and personal liturgies, you know, our quirky family traditions, those are a form of liturgy. Even our morning routines, how we brush our teeth and put on our shoes, those are liturgies. And so when you consider that, then adding a more global ancient form of liturgy really does make your ordinary days feel a little bit more like they are seen by our brothers and sisters, you know, the great cloud of witnesses. And so for me, it's just really enriched my everyday life, I think, in regard to that. And then the other thing that has made it really special and helpful is because there's so much writing stemming from things like Lent and Easter in the forms of like old prayers and rituals, it's really given me some form to the things that I meditate on, pray about, recite, read, especially just in stages when I'm just not sure what I think or believe, or I'm not feeling it. Yeah. You know, it's not dependent on those things. You know, I can say that, gosh, a fellow sojourner of life said this thing 1500 years ago, perhaps because it's time tested and been around. I can agree with this timeless truth and just hold on to it as my own because they said it so much better than I ever could. And just trust that this truth can get me through my ordinary, you know, 2022 era day.
So for anyone who may be new to this and are thinking through what to fast for Lent, you share 5 questions to ask yourself. Can you talk about those?
Sure. Yeah, because Lent, like I said, is for everybody. I wrote Bitter and Sweet for both the Christian who's, you know, participated in it from their beginning, you know, perhaps because of the family they grew up in, all the way to someone who this would be their literal first year of Lent. So when it comes to fasting, I think for those of us, I mean, you know, it's already the middle of Lent right now, yeah, but you can jump in at any time. Yeah. Nonetheless, I think even when we start from the beginning, it usually sneaks up on us, you right. know, like, oh yeah, Ash Wednesday is tomorrow. Yeah. And so we tend to maybe pick a fast that's like just kind of without a lot of thought or yes, just kind of quick or easy. Uh-huh. And so these are questions that just ask us to slow down and contemplate a little bit. So the 5 questions I have are, have I become overly dependent on a particular sustenance, substance, or practice lately? And that's simply just, you know, it's what it sounds like. Is there something that I know in my life I just have a bit too much of, or I'm a little bit too dependent on for my liking? The second one is, which appetites have a unique grip on my body or soul these days? And this speaks into what I write about more in Bitter and Sweet. I actually walk through the 7 traditional vices and virtues recognized by the church. And it's not so much important that everything is defined with it within a clear category, but those who have gone before us have seen the wisdom in recognizing that most of the sins that we deal with fall into these 7 typical categories. And so they really are forms of appetites, things that our bodies crave. So like gluttony or sloth or greed or some form of that. The third question is, what would be a genuinely challenging but not burdensome fast? So I already spoken to that a little bit, but what would be something that is not just super easy, you know, so an example would be like my 11-year-old giving up coffee. I mean, he doesn't drink coffee, so that's not really a fast, but also isn't challenging or so burdensome that it becomes a form of legalism or is a thing that's more about the fast as an end instead of a means to an end, you know, which is why we don't give up all food usually, that kind of thing. A fourth one would be, what would be genuinely or truly freeing to leave behind? What's something that you just feel like, you know, I'm not sure I even need this in my life. Am I using it as a crutch? Am I using it to replace something that God wants me to have my need met in some other way? And then the last one, this sounds kind of Sunday school, but it really is the most important one is, what do I sense God calling me to? Mm-hmm. And the reason I end with that question is because I can, you know, meditate and contemplate on all these other things. But at the end of the day, I find God, the fast God's calling me to usually just kind of slams into my brain when I least expect it. Like, well, I'm taking a shower or sitting in traffic and it's just something I sense God leading me to. I often, reply with, oh no, not that. But when I reflect and meditate on it, I realize, yeah, this is what God's leading me to.
That's good. So what do you hope for people who are maybe starting it for the first time this year or people who do it every year?
You know, whether you've done it before a million times or this is your first time, my prayer for all of us every Lent is that we would be surprised by God. Yeah. And I say that because that is the point. The point of Lent is to hear from God in a unique way anyway, by taking on these temporary practices. And so my prayer in whatever it is we do with these three pillars is that God would speak to us in a way we never would have guessed. And this happens to me every year. So like if I've got a fast that's a little bit more about, you know, food, I'm thinking, oh, God's going to talk to me about gluttony and about temperance, but it never ends up the way I think it is. God always surprises me about, you know, something he wants to teach me about myself and also about him and his grace. So that's my hope for all of us.
If I can I ask you what you're fasting this year?
Oh, sure. It's not exciting. I was hoping for something more interesting to share on all these podcasts, but it's not. I'm fasting from snacks.
Oh, okay.
So I noticed that I was just eating occasionally just because it was there.
Yeah.
And recognizing that I didn't even want the thing. It was just like something for my hands to do. Mm-hmm. And so I am fasting right now from any sort of eating that's not a sit-down meal. And that's it. So
that's great.
It's simple, but it's been, it's funny. Like day one, it was a struggle.
Yeah.
And so to me, it was like, yeah, this is what God wants me to fast from right now. So,
Are you like fidgeting with other things now instead?
I'm finding myself fidgeting. Like, I don't know if you noticed my hair.
I did notice the hair tie.
Yep. It's just a silly, I'm about to go eat a meal in just a second after we're done. And so right now it's just this like, oh yeah, whenever I'm feeling the need to snack for no real reason, you know, not hunger, then I'm just going to fidget. But I think God's also teaching me like, it's okay. I always provide. I think it's just, I don't know. I find my just silly little temporal body just start, like, it's not a panic. It's just sort of this feeling of like, oh no, I'm not doing this thing that I'm just used to doing for no real reason. And God's just wanting to tell me, it's okay. You got this. It'll be fine. So
totally.
It's all about trust.
Yeah. That's really cool. I love that. Well, I have one last question for you. And this is something that I ask all of my guests. It's very simple. What is a great thing that you're into right now?
It is such a simple thing, but it really truly gives me life. And that is a daily walk.
Yeah.
So right now, you know, like I'm looking out my window, it's 30 something degrees right now. I don't feel like going on a walk. I feel like staying in, you know, my cozy socks and not leaving the house. But I've been trying to go on a walk every afternoon pretty religiously. And every time I do, I'm glad I did. And I'm not talking anything fancy. I'm talking a 15, 20 minute walk around my neighborhood. Every time I do that, I just feel my soul quiet. I just kind of I recognize the small, ordinary good things, you know, the sound of birds or the leaves or whatever. And I come back feeling so much better. And I tend to do this in the afternoon because that's when I kind of get my natural brain slump, you know, when I can't be bothered to do much else. And so, but every time I do that, I come back home ready to take on the rest of the day. So afternoon walk has been my thing lately.
That's awesome. Well, Tish, I appreciate you coming on today to share about your book and what the Lord has put on your heart. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
If you're like me and haven't always participated in Lent, I hope this conversation encourages you to think about things a little differently than before. Maybe you're considering observing Lent, but feel like it's too late to jump in. Well, like Tish said, you can start at any time. It's not too late. If you'd like to check out her book and find out more about Lent, click the link in the show notes. Just like Lent is an invitation to go deeper, God first gives us an invitation to be in relationship with Him. That still blows my mind that the creator of the universe cares about me and wants a relationship with me and you. Thousands of years ago, He saw a problem, that sin was separating people from Him. So His solution was to send His son Jesus to be a bridge. Jesus came and lived a human life on earth, but didn't sin. He made the ultimate sacrifice of dying a brutal death on a cross to pay for the sins of all of us. Just like scripture foretold, He raised from the dead and ascended into heaven where we can spend eternity with Him. He did that because He loves us so much. All we have to do is believe in Him and follow Him. So if you'd like to learn more about how to do that, let us help you. Head over to greatthings.fm/resources. The link is also in the show notes. If you have any prayer requests, don't hesitate to send them over on there too, or reach out on social media. If you're new around here, don't forget to subscribe. And if you're feeling extra generous, leave a review. That helps more people find out about great things. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you'll join us again next week.